I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a free screening of a film, Birth of a Family, Wednesday the 24th of January. One can't recommend enough to go see it because it's a powerful film. Tasha Hubbard, its director, joins me now. I'll get her to tell us about this film that follows four Indigenous siblings, victims of the 60s scoop, as they meet for the first time. Betty Ann Adam of the Saskatoon Star Phoenix is one of the siblings, and for years has sought to find her brother and two sisters. She finally does, and this film chronicles their meeting at the Calgary airport before heading off for a reunion at Banff. This film has already won the 2017 Edmonton International Film Festival's Audience Award for Best Documentary Feature and a special jury prize, Moon Jury, at Imagine Native 2017. The film's producer is Bonnie Thompson. On Wednesday, the 24th, Tasha and Betty Ann Adam will participate in a Q&A after the film at SFU Woodwards. It's part of the Abizingwashi NFB Indigenous Cinema Tour to bring as many of the film board's Indigenous-helmed films to the public free of charge or at low cost. Tasha Hubbard is a writer, filmmaker, and an assistant professor at the University of Saskatchewan's Department of English. She is from Pipixas First Nation in Treaty 4 territory. She has recently been appointed to the National Film Board's Indigenous Advisory Council. At Tash Hubbard is the Twitter handle. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Tasha Hubbard. Ms. Hubbard, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, as I was telling you before we started, just how much I love the film, because it's such a powerful film and a lovely one at that, because all four of these people are such lovely people, and you get a sense of that very early on, don't you?
Yeah, you know, and I'll say, like, I had only met Betty Ann prior.
Uh-huh.
Like, I really was meeting them all for the first time when I was going to their homes and filming the short pieces. And, you know, I was struck by that, just, you know, what strong personalities they all had and yet very different.
Yeah, and there's a sense of... peace is not the right word, but a serenity amongst all four of them. And you know, I don't know how much of that. I guess we can trace that to the mother, right?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, she definitely had a way of, you know, coming to terms with her situation.
Uh-huh.
It's possible.
Yeah. So, Betty Ann Adam... is a journalist in, is it Saskatoon or is it Regina?
Yeah, no, she's in Saskatoon.
In Saskatoon, yeah. And so she was the first one you met, obviously, and how long ago was that?
Yeah, so Betty Ann and I met actually while I was making my first film, Two Worlds Colliding, about the freezing deaths of Indigenous men at the hands of police.
Mm-hmm.
And Betty Ann was a journalist, and still is, at the local newspaper. And so our, you know, we would meet at different events. You know, she'd be covering the story, and I was filming. And we just stayed in touch over the years. And then she approached me about 4 months before they were coming together about the possibility of documenting it.
Yeah, and I guess someone had told her that this should be filmed, right?
Yeah, she had met Marie Wilson, who is one of the commissioners of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission,
mm-hmm.
and had, you know, shared with her that her mother had been a residential school survivor and that, you know, she herself had found the siblings, and she was urged at that point by Ms. Wilson to document it, to share this moment with others.
Was there any reticence on the part of any of the siblings, the other three siblings, as to filming it, say?
No. I think, you know, they had questions about how I was going to film it.
Right.
And, you know, the reality TVs had an interesting effect on, you know, how people perceive how a documentary is made. And
I'll
think
bet,
that
yeah.
was a concern, you right. know, and I was like, you know, no, like, I'm not going to have the camera pointing at you when you wake up in the morning, you know, kind
yeah.
of thing. Like, you know, we want to be there and be a part of this week together, but, you know, we also want you to have your time alone. And so really it was just about navigating a good balance where I felt as the director that I'm really capturing the essence of what's happening, and seeing the range of what happens, and to be there during those difficult conversations. But, you know, they also had time on their own, and they actually, we gave them almost a whole day near the end, and by then they were so used to having us with them that when they got back, they were like, oh, you guys missed out, and you should have been there, and it was great. And they were like thinking, you know, we'd really given them this gift of being able to go somewhere without a crew, you know, tagging along.
Yeah. What makes this film so enjoyable for the viewer is how it's shot. And there are many moments in the film, even early on when you're at the airport with them, where it's shot from away, so it doesn't feel intrusive. And you as the viewer almost feel as if you're coming across these folks like any other people that you would see at the airport. Was that deliberate in terms of how you shot this?
Yeah, absolutely. It was conversations that my producer, Bonnie Thompson, with the NFB, and I had at the beginning, and then when we put the crew together, it was something I expressed really strongly that, I wanted us as viewers to really earn that access to them, and that, you know, we have the expectation because of television and current trends that, you know, we see everything, we're upfront and close and personal right off the top, and for two reasons, I felt really strongly, you know, that is that sense of earning, but also, you know, logistically, I didn't want to negatively affect this week that they had, that, you know, I was very aware this is the only time they're going to have this first week. And, you know, do I want them tripping over my, the camera and having, feeling that, you know, we're in their personal space.
Right.
As it was, the cabin was quite small and we were quite close to them, but we were able to balance that throughout the week of just keeping our distance and I think also it's just more cinematic that way too, right? Where you really see where they are and see their surroundings, and it becomes a part of the story too.
Yeah, because you realize, even though they're related, that this is the first time that they've met, and you do feel sort of the isolation, if you will, because they are elsewhere. They're not where they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And as a viewer, it does draw you in very quickly as to the importance of this and almost to feel how they're feeling, because they are coming together for the first time. We mentioned Mary Jane Adam. That's their mother. She had these four children in the 60s, and each one was eventually picked up by the government of the time, and all the children were brought where, to foster homes?
Yeah, so Esther, who's the second born, was apprehended first, and then Betty Ann as a three-year-old, and then the other two as newborns. And yes, all placed in foster care. Ben and Esther were eventually adopted by their foster parents. But Rose and Betty Ann remained foster children, which actually, in the end, helped Betty Ann because, they were able to be their mother's legal heirs, her and her sister Rose. And what we didn't put in the film, but it, with the common experience payment given to residential school survivors, when that came about, their mother had already passed on, but Betty Ann arranged for it, and as the legal heir, because she'd never been adopted, her and Rose were able to access. That's what they used to bring them all together from all of these different places that they lived, and the idea being, what is money? mm-hmm. right? And but if they can turn that money into this, you know, coming together of family, that's what, you know, is generative yeah. out of these processes.
Yeah, so they all end up in Banff for this week, which you film.
Yeah.
Esther, you mentioned, is from California. Rose mm-hmm. is from here in British Columbia,
Rose
is that right?
Rose is in B.C.,
yeah.
yep. And Ben is in Alberta.
Right.
And Betty Ann in Saskatchewan.
Yeah, and so Banff was I guess, in and around there was where they were born, is that right?
No, they're from northern Saskatchewan, Fond du Lac.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They chose Banff because they wanted somewhere neutral.
Mm.
And they wanted it to be a holiday.
Mm.
And have a family holiday together. And Banff was just central, and that's, in the end, what they went with.
Yeah, and so I guess Betty Ann was the one who had worked for many, many years to try to find her siblings. Is that right?
Yeah. She had found Rose when they were teenagers. Betty Ann, I think, was 18 or something like that, and Rose was 12 or 13. Because the social workers and some sort of by chance situation realized they were living very close to each other,
mm-hmm.
But had no contact growing up. So they were able to meet. And then Betty Ann found out about Esther and Ben when she'd gone up to Fond du Lac as a young woman and was able to see records. And at that point, you know, she said, I'm going to find them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it took a lot of time because Ben and Esther had been legally adopted. They didn't realize Ben had been born in Alberta, so there were no records of him in Saskatchewan.
Mm.
And they also didn't know that Esther had been taken out of the country.
Yeah. And Esther does mention that she tried to do her own work from her end.
Yeah.
But that was very difficult.
Yeah. Canada was not helpful.
And there was a personal a personal yeah. thing because her adopted mother, I guess, found that. Well, Esther respected her adopted mother.
Yeah,
but she sort of dropped
it. That's pretty
common,
yeah. I think. I think there's a notion that we have around kids and possessiveness, right?
You know,
this child becomes theirs. And I think, you know, that's an interesting focus because, you know, in an Indigenous belief system, you don't own your children.
Mm-hmm.
They're not yours. And so, you know, it's a very different way of looking at your kids.
Yeah.
But a lot of adoptive families felt that way and still do. And they're still, you know, discouraging their fostered or adopted adult children in reconnecting. And, you know, I think that comes with this belief that, you know, Indigenous people are less than,
mm-hmm.
you know, that it's a negative. And so, you know, I think that's not uncommon that,
yeah.
you know, people feel like, you know, they should be their only family as opposed to, you know, understanding that people want to know where they come from. People want to know,
yeah.
you know, who their families are.
Right. You're from some marvelous opportunity for all of us, especially those of us who've seen it and who should see it, to talk about the 60s scoop.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see right here, for people today who are affected by it. This was also your experience in your life, is that right?
Yeah, I was adopted out into a farming family, a non-Indigenous farm family, as a baby.
Yeah. Now, mm-hmm. to Betty and Ben and Esther and Rose's experience, the reason why they were removed, I mean, is that common for all the children that were affected by the 60s scoop?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons. I mean, in some cases, it was around the safety of the child. In lots of cases, though, it was racism by the institutions, right?
Mm.
That, you know, that Indigenous people are not living a middle-class nuclear family existence. Therefore, you know, the children should be removed. In some places, social workers and RCMP went into communities, and if they found a child walking on the street, they were taken and apprehended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just swooped in and took all the kids. enough. In some cases were sold to the state. There's stories of children's parents paying $30,000 to adopt an Indigenous child out of Winnipeg. Winnipeg was pretty notorious as a center for that. So, you know, it really ranges. Betty Ann and intends to tell the story more fully, but ultimately their mother was a single mother. That was enough. You know, so there's lots of different reasons, but ultimately it's that belief, right, that these children are better off living in a white home as opposed to living amongst their family and in their communities.
And so it's not just the 1960s, it's from 1955 to 85.
And it's to today.
Right.
There's more kids in care today than went through the residential school system.
Right.
I mean, that belief has not changed.
And so, in making a film like this, you're giving a lot of us an opportunity to talk about this and the way we should talk about this, almost.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the hope, right, as a documentary filmmaker, you're presenting a story, you know, and a strong story. And, you know, I come from a place where... I want to tell a story. I want there to be learning and information entwined with that, but ultimately a really strong story. And that was what was, you know, really appealing as a filmmaker, was this notion of them coming together and that it hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
You know, that we could be there to witness that and tell the story. But yeah, you know, always with the hope that people, if they don't understand the 60s group or have not heard of it, to learn about it.
Right.
You know, and I think it's why we didn't put a lot of backstory in and a lot of, you know, information. I really just hope that the film encourages people to go, you know what, I've never really heard about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn more.
And Betty Ann talks in the film about... how this affected her life in these interceding years, especially because people inevitably have asked her, and I'm assuming have asked her three siblings, whether they might have been better off because of having been taken away from their mother, and She's contended with that over the years, hasn't she? And she tells in the film exactly how that's made her feel, I guess, and what she thinks now. Because that has changed for her, hasn't it?
Oh, for sure. You know, I think it's just the assumptions, right? The assumptions that come that a white home is inherently better than an Indigenous home. But a lot of people who went through that foster and adoption system are coming back with stories of abuse, sexual, physical, of being labor, of being, you know, shamed every day for their brown skin, for not having a proper bedroom and sleeping in little closets or porches. These stories are very common. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's the they're better off, but, you know, is that better off to live that kind of existence or to live in a family where you're loved?
Yeah. And she says in the film that she did feel, especially when it came to her heritage, because I guess in Betty Ann's case, she was raised in a white home. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And most were.
Yeah,
you know, most were.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think, and Betty Ann also expresses, you know, this, her concern is also, you know, not particular to her family in that she, you know, was loved and cared for.
Yeah.
You know, that's also you know, an experience for people for sure. Like I said, it's a real range. But, you know, there is a loss that you feel to not know your language, you know, to not know your people, the lands you come from. And we have strong connections to that. And, you know, I think even the most well-meaning adoptive parents can do their best but still not be able to fulfill that void.
And
you know, even those of us that have had good experiences, you know, I think that's what drives that hope to come home.
Yeah, and so she says in the film that she's ripped off, and then all four of them go to in Banff to meet an elder. And it's such a moving and powerful moment in the film where after their visit and the elder does his walk through I guess there's an exhibit there where he explains Native culture to folks that go through there and mm-hmm. to these four siblings. And she's just so moved by it. It's such a beautiful moment. And one of the things he says to her at the end of it as they leave is, "Welcome home."
Yeah. You know, and that's it. I mean, you know, when you grow up away, you know, that's, and as I said, even in good homes, you know, you're growing up and living around people who don't resemble you,
yeah.
You know, who maybe don't understand, the way you think and the way you approach things. So, I think that's a big belief or desire,
yeah.
Right, for those who've gone through the system to be welcomed home, you know, to be accepted and find a sense of belonging that they may not have had growing up where they have.
And all four of them were affected by that visit, weren't they, in the talk with the elder, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, and in different ways, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think they all felt it very special, you know,
uh-huh.
to be in and to have that opportunity. But I think Betty Ann is, you know, she's the one who felt the loss most keenly.
Yeah. And so some of us have seen the film in Canada on television already.
Mm-hmm.
Have all four siblings seen the film yet?
Oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah.
So Betty Ann was involved in the editing
right.
process and saw it sort of evolve.
Yeah.
And then I had wanted the siblings to see it together,
mm-hmm.
and before a public audience got to see it. So we had hoped for a while that it would be shown in Edmonton, that we'd be able to bring them all to Edmonton. Also just to meet the people at the film board,
yeah.
you know, who had been so committed to the film and making it happen. And in the end, that didn't work out. Esther wasn't able to travel at that time. So we ended up taking it down to California. And the film board rented a screening room in Santa Monica, and all the siblings came down, and I went down, and we sat in the screening room and watched it together.
And so that takes on a different experience altogether. Are you able to share with us just how each of them felt after seeing it together for the first time?
Yeah, it was really emotional.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all crying
uh-huh.
at some point. They were happy to see it. They were happy. They felt that it was as they remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, you know. That was one of Betty Ann's first comments when we showed her an early version, you know, and we just did an assembly, basically, of all the pieces we thought we might use, and it was like 2.5-3 hours.
Mm.
And, you know, she said, yeah, this is how I remember it. And, you know, they've all said something, you know, like, this is an amazing photo album of a family vacation, you know, of their time together.
It's such an enjoyable film, and I could talk all day with you about it. There's a moose in the film. It's a moose, isn't it, or a deer?
It's an elk, yeah.
An elk, yeah.
Yeah. I love that scene.
Yeah, and we see the elk a couple times in the film. And I guess it's so close to these living quarters that one can rent there at Banff. So it's not at all dangerous, is it?
No. The elk are pretty acclimatized to people. I mean, you don't
yeah.
want to go up...
Too close, yeah.
You know, too close. You know, they're wild. But
yeah.
But they're used to humans. So, yeah, they're there. You know, that's the thing about Banff. Is it's in the middle of the animal's home.
Yeah.
So the animals still live there. And, yeah, it's not... unusual occurrence. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought about it as I was writing my notes, and so many beautiful moments, not only of these four people, but just you realize just how beautiful this country is, even if you haven't been to Banff like I haven't been. It's a country that we need to see.
Yeah, and it's a country that is beautiful, you know, and yet, you know, there's some ugly history that needs to be looked at, too. And, you know, that's what I was interested in, is the contrast in some ways, right, of this beautiful area. But, you know, Indigenous people lived in Banff and were displaced for a lot of our national parks, moved out of these spaces in order to create them. And, you know, I don't get into that in the film, but it's something I'm thinking about for sure.
Yeah, like I think, you know, Stanley Parker in Vancouver to create this thing that historically is, you know, what we consider, unvarnished nature, you know, had a lot of people living in there, a lot of Indigenous people.
Yeah, Banff, Jasper, Riding Mountain. Yeah, no, and it's, you know, that's the thing. I think as Canadian people, you know, there's a lot of gaps in, you know, knowledge of the history, and Indigenous people make up a very big gap in how we understand how we've been treated and what the thinking is behind a lot of these policies that have been really destructive. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought a lot about family and how important family is, and kinship systems, and you know, so many of the policies that Canada's had have been to attack the family.
Yeah. Well, you present four remarkable people in this film, and you do marvelous service in terms of getting us to talk, and for a lot of people, I'm assuming, to learn about the 60s scoop for the first time. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. And you know, I'm glad. I wanted something that you could people could just follow through and get to know these people on some level. It'd be personalized, right? What these policies could do.
I so appreciate your time today, and encourage people listening to us to come down and see you on the 24th and
really the screening. Looking forward to it. I'm so glad it's going to have a Vancouver date, it's our first big public screening in the area. So yeah, I'm really excited.
Birth of a Family is at SFU Woodward's Wednesday, the 24th of January at 7 p.m. Tasha Hubbard joined me on the line from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.